Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Today on the podcast, given the technology we've just wrangled, it's absolutely amazing we have a guest in the conversation at all, but it is my absolute delight to introduce you to Danielle Williams. And part of the prep was I honestly didn't know how to introduce Danielle, but Danielle is the amazing mum of two spectacular young girls. And the last part of the family who isn't joining the conversation is Dan as well. And, you know, Danielle said, well, I'm just a special needs mum and we're just going to shoot that just down. So, Danielle, how would you introduce yourself under these circumstances?
Well, I'm a special needs mum to two very complex girls. And Kathy, you've known us for a very long time, for about seven years, I think, when we first knew something was not quite right with our eldest. And we've been on a very long journey since then.
Paint the picture of your beautiful girls for us. I love your girls.
Yeah. So we've got two little girls. Jaylee's 9.5, Darlie's 7.5. Both have a very rare genetic condition called SYNGAP. And when we first, the first sign that anything was wrong was when Jaylee was about 13 months old and she started with little seizures, which didn't necessarily look like seizures to anyone, particularly to the first pediatrician we saw, who told us that we were being quite neurotic and go home. So they were very subtle to begin with, but pretty quickly escalated into drop seizures, jerk seizures, literally losing all muscle tension in their bodies, dropping to the ground at any moment, and not just, you know, once in a while. It was hundreds a day.
Hundreds a day.
Yeah, 52 an hour probably at the worst, 52 an hour on a video EEG sleep study we had done back in the dark years, we call them. We have since emerged from the dark years, but there were about 2.5 years there where we honestly, between Dan and I don't think we spoke much. They were very dark years.
Our survival, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And during that time you were pregnant with Darlie.
That's right, yes. I haven't really given you a proper picture of the girls. I've given you the epilepsy side. And for us that anchors us, because that was our first diagnosis. We went to the emergency department and we got a diagnosis of epilepsy, and that was what we're really anchored to, and we're very connected to the epilepsy community. And a lot of the kids, our girls' condition is called SYNGAP. A lot of the kids with SYNGAP are more connected to the autism communities, and it's interesting because it just depends which community they first connected to, as in which problem arose first. And for us, it was definitely seizures, but the behavioural issues are without a doubt there. One of the girls have an autism diagnosis, one doesn't, but definitely both have autistic-like traits. They have high pain thresholds. They have they're very impulsive. They have no fear factor. Well, the youngest has no fear factor. the behavioural issues are probably the most challenging at the moment. They're non-verbal. They're ataxic. So they've got the physical elements as well. So there's a whole concoction, a conglomerate. What's the group term?
Collective
here?
Noun. I think complex kind of covers it. Complex,
yes.
And awesome. Yeah.
A lot of things going on with these little girls that makes it really hard as a parent, and I think equally as hard as a therapist who's in their lives.
Yeah. Why did you guys persist to the global extent that you did to get to the bottom of diagnosis?
So we got the epilepsy diagnosis, but what I explained to you just then is way beyond just epilepsy. And in the first year, I think we probably thought, oh, is it the epilepsy causing all the other symptoms, or is there something else that's causing everything, including the epilepsy? And I think that curiosity just got the better of us, and we were searching for the source. I think a lot of people, and some people choose to do this, and I'm certainly not saying it's the wrong thing to do, but a lot of people get, say, an autism diagnosis or an epilepsy diagnosis, and they're just comfortable living with that. But for Dan and I, we're both very inquisitive people. We both have kind of a very science background, and we want to know why. What's causing all of these things? It's not a coincidence they both have the same collective of symptoms, which are very debilitating from a lifestyle perspective. What's causing this? So we got eventually whole genome sequencing, because the first genetic testing found nothing for us. So we did the whole exome, we did the microarray, and it came back with nothing, which I think 50%, I know 50% of epilepsies come back without a genetic cause. So it's not uncommon. But then I heard about a new machine. There was one in Australia at the time, a whole genome sequencing machine. And so we wrangled our way into being the guinea pigs for them.
A bit of wrangling.
Yes. So this was the Garvan Institute that Genome One launched with this machine, and they did a whole genome sequence on the four of us, Dan, myself, and the two girls. And they came back 8 months later. Now it happens, I think, in a few days. But back then it was 8 months later we got a call, and we were told that it was SYNGAP. And that
you all Googled on those days.
Yeah. Was quite astounding to have a name. And that for us was a turning point. I mean, there's no treatment, there's no cure. We are now connected to a whole community of people who have the same quirky conglomerate of symptoms that our girls have, and we are just tight. We know each other well. I mean, they're the first, the global SYNGAPians. They're the first people I speak to in the morning, the last people at night, and in between as well. We're connected.
And what role have you two played in building that global community?
So when we got the diagnosis, I think there were just a few others in Australia. And so we first of all set up a, I want to say foundation, but we didn't set up our own foundation. What we did was we're very conservative with our energy. So where we invest our energy, especially when we're so limited with it, we found a way to set up a foundation or get the benefits of a foundation by being able to fundraise and have that taxable benefit. We partnered with the Epilepsy Foundation, and they are our fiscal partner. So we have SYNGAP Research, which is connected with the Epilepsy Foundation, and so we set that up. So that was a fundraising platform. Then we also set up not ourselves, but we co-founded a group called SYNGAP Global Network. And SYNGAP Global Network is people from all over the world who are the advocates in their countries. And there's 9 countries now. We're all connected as SYNGAP Global Network. And ironically, not ironically, coincidentally, on the 21st of June is SYNGAP Awareness Day.
Oh, so, you know. Oh, yes, it's some posts shared. Cool.
Yeah, so it's all happening on the 21st of June. We created our first SYNGAP Awareness Day just last year. So that was the first thing we did. There was already a foundation that existed, but it was predominantly American. And obviously as the patient group grows, there's going to be different flavors of what people are looking for and what focus areas people have. And ours in Australia is clearly research. And we've been fundraising, and lobbying government for research. And we were successful in getting a government grant last year. Mm. And we now have SYNGAP researchers sitting in the Florey Institute lab. Who are looking at ways they're developing stem cells off Jaylee's biopsy, and they're looking at ways to fix this, which sounds wacky and weird. But I mean, technology and medical science. I mean, it's advancing at the rate of knots. So why wouldn't we think that it could help us too?
Yeah, or next generation, or. Yeah. People later in life when the research has matured, and May completely. Not be now, but it may be next.
Yes, you're right. You're right. I mean, we live in hope that it's going to help our girls, but I mean, I don't think it's fruitless regardless.
Yeah, absolutely. So what has been your experience with allied health professionals, with the girls? We'll get to the NDIS question in a minute. But what you've had a lot of providers, a lot of medical providers, a lot of OT, speech, psych, physio, all of that. What's your take on it?
So I think you've been actually quite instrumental in our journey, because I remember in the first few years, without a SYNGAP diagnosis, just with an epilepsy and lots of other things diagnosis, we went pretty hard with the therapies, and there was a phase there where we were doing weekly OT, weekly speech, and it got exhausting. Mm. And I remember, Kathy, you said to me one day, you know, you can have a break. you can take a break from this and just be normal family for a little bit. And that was that permission. I mean, I didn't need the permission, but that kind of idea was something I'd never even considered. But it was really great advice. And we did take a break. And we had a break I think when Jaylee started prep, we had a break. And it was pretty good timing, because she probably would have been overloaded at that point anyway because of the new environment and the therapies in the school. Mm. So yeah, we've had a lot of different therapists. I think it's tricky finding therapists that have the same sort of philosophy as you. And I've now drafted a tips document, which I really drafted for carers that come into our lives and help care for our girls. But this tips document has our guiding principles in life, in parenting, in anyone who comes into contact with our kids. And some of the key principles are: we want them to have fun. We don't want to rob them of a childhood. We want them to have the same sort of childhood as any other kid, with the fun and the iPads and the, you know, wanting another biscuit. And it's where we want to try, we're craving the normality, and we don't want to deprive our kids of that just because we need to teach them to be more independent and to be more, to be better at the schedule. I mean, it's finding that balance. And I'm not saying we've got the balance, but we're very aware of the balance, and we're aware that we need a bit of both. And and we'll find that balance one day. We're not quite there.
Captain Feathersword needs her space.
Yeah, the girls love their dress up.
It's totally okay to do OT with a Ninja Turtle.
You've got to be flexible. Anyone who deals with our kids has got to be able to adapt and think on the fly, without a doubt. And then it's not going to be a standard therapy session where they just sit in the chair you'd anticipate it. No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. What else would you like health professionals to know from your side of the conversation?
I think, and I was actually reading some of my anecdotes. So every now and then when something sinks with me, when I realise something, I make a list of these anecdotes. And I was just reading one before I dialed in today. And one of the anecdotes was, in the early years, no one said to us that there was something wrong with our child. And I think everyone knew, all the therapists, all the specialists, no one had actually said, your child is likely not going to be normal. And until I met one person, and they said that to me, and I cried that day. But I was actually really grateful that they'd told me that, because when you've got a kid with complex needs, you don't know if you're blowing it out of proportion. You don't know if they're on the trajectory of being not normal or atypical, or whether it's just a blip and then they'll get back to normal. But I think the therapists know. They know more than the parents do. And I don't think every parent maybe is ready to hear that. Mm. But maybe feel out if a parent is looking for that kind of news, because for us, I really wanted to hear that. I needed to hear that. I wanted to hear, your child is not like normal kids we see. That's what I wanted to hear, because then I needed to change my expectations, change the way I deal with her and the therapies, and that, you know, it's not a short-term solution I'm looking for. I'm in this for the long haul. That for me would have been useful, I think.
That's super interesting. And it is an N equals one scenario about the readiness of the therapist to kind of
yes.
go to that corner, and the readiness of the customer, the parent, the child, the
yes.
partner, the extended family to go to that place as well.
It could go either way, yeah. And I suppose you've got to use your intuition, and there's a lot of factors there. But for me, I wanted to hear it. I did.
Yeah. I realise now that I didn't even invite Dan into this conversation, but you can apologise to him later. What was his experience and expectations around being involved in those early days and the therapy and the programs and the rest of it?
Well, Dan just this year has stepped out of his hibernation as a special needs dad, and I think he's stepped out and owned it and kind of put himself out there emotionally and said, this is not an easy ride. This is really emotionally taxing, difficult.
He's been on stage too.
He has. Wow. It's been hell. And he's finally come out and said it. But I think in the early days he was just not really open to getting very hands-on. I mean, he's a hands-on dad.
Absolutely.
But he wasn't open to being hands-on with the therapies and being proactive. It for him, it was not what he'd envisaged, and I think he wasn't as quick to adapt to a different type of parenting as I was, perhaps because I was with them more. So I knew I didn't have a choice quicker than he did.
Yeah. I personally believe that we, and I'll just speak for every allied health professional on the planet, well, particularly those serving kids and families, I really don't believe we involve the dads and the grandparents and the aunts and uncles and the cousins, even the siblings. I don't think we do that well yet.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, what strikes me with speech therapy, with nonverbal kids especially, I mean, our kids can have weekly or fortnightly sessions, but honestly, if we don't, as the family members or the carers, embrace the technology or the pod book or the PECS system, whatever you're using, if you don't embrace it as a family, it's not going to work. So what dawned on me recently is we probably need regular speech therapy sessions to get into the habit of using these new devices and these new languages. It should be, you're right, you're absolutely right, it should be more family-oriented therapy as opposed to patient-specific therapy.
Yeah. The magic mostly happens in between the therapy sessions. So being on point with what and what not and what to look for and what to notice and report back in on isn't always as smooth as it could be, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think another area therapy is not helping families is the notes. So the notes are useful, but
the
it'd be great.
Session notes
after? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What do you recommend? Go for gold.
I don't have a solution. I've got a problem. So the problem is that it's really hard to consolidate and tease out the main points from the sessions. So maybe the solution lies somewhere that the therapist could just call out, I don't know, three things that they're doing well, three things that the family needs to work on. And what we've just set up is Slack. I don't know if you know about Slack.
Love Slack. My whole business runs on Slack.
Excellent. So we've set up a Slack workspace for each child. And in each of those workspaces, we've
got the
channels for each therapy. Now, the problem is bringing the therapists on the ride, because Slack is a great tool, but you really need to be invested in it for it to work well.
Yep.
And everyone in the workspace has to be invested in it. So I think that could be a solution if we got kind of a method where we said those three great things or three things to work on, framework, and then each therapist could upload that into Slack as opposed to emailing it into the parents' inbox. I mean, we've got a lot of things in our inboxes. Lots of therapies, lots of bills, you know, there's a lot going on. If we could just get those three key things. I think that would be it.
Whoa. Well, you can persist and train your team to deliver on that.
Yes. Yes,
what's
I know.
Great about Slack is that it's such a good app from your mobile phone.
It's free.
Have you heard of the application SameView?
No.
Okay.
Is it with an N or an M?
Same. Well, maybe, I know the developer really well. He's been a podcast guest. You could easily swap them out, hey? But it is a platform to bring the team together regarding goals and progress and communication.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. I wonder if it then interlaces with Slack or whether it's just an offshoot.
I don't know. My understanding is it's a standalone program. So I'll send you the link and introductions afterwards. We digress. We knew we would digress.
Yes.
We knew we would digress. So allied health professionals, a little bit more of a family approach, the occasional well-timed reality, whatever reality is perceived, kind of check-in.
But also maybe, sense what they want to hear as well. Yeah. Sometimes I think people are not ready to hear things.
Yep, that's right. Summarising those session notes as well. It sounds as though honesty is a bit of a theme also in terms of really good direct communication and really good genuine conversation. There's some of the thoughts for allied health business to ponder.
Yeah, I think so. And just summaries. I mean, a report that's 10 pages long might be best practice for an OT or a ABA therapist or a speechy, but really I just want the highlights.
The first and the last page. Yeah, you want just the highlight reel. Just
give me the summary, all the templated stuff. Give to the next person, please.
Oh, court writing, goodness. People have pulled their cars over, I think, at this point, if they're listening to that one. Tell me, and I am really, really interested to hear, what has been your experience with the NDIS?
Well, I don't know what you're expecting to hear, but it's actually been positive.
Wonderful.
Before we got the NDIS, we had access to the $6,000 from Better Start for one child and the other $6,000 from another acronymed grant scheme. I can't remember what it was called. So that was for the first 7 years of their life. We got $6,000, which is less than $1,000 a year. Does not go far. Think about your own rates. And then post NDIS, we're much better off. I cannot complain. I really can't. But I think we had amazing support coordinators who helped navigate us through the NDIS, because anything new, you really need some pros to give you guidance. Yeah. And they certainly did that. They told us what we should be expecting. We also had an amazing PED who told us what we should be getting out of the NDIS, and she wrote obviously a supporting letter to that effect. And the support coordinators didn't charge us anything, and they said, if we can package in the fee into your plans, that's how we'll get paid. For me, I mean, that concept of getting paid upon outcomes for me is brilliant. And I don't know if there's something there for the future of therapies, but it could be. I mean, it's obviously a very big risk, but you've got to back your ability to deliver as well. I definitely like that. And we were very lucky to get what I think are big packages. Definitely multipliers of the 6,000 we got initially from pre-NDIS.
As a family, what has it enabled you to do?
Relax a little bit more. Mm. For the first time in 8 years, it was 9 years when we started, we got a night's sleep in our own house. So I didn't mention in the early...
I was going to ask about sleep.
Yeah. So our eldest doesn't sleep. Jaylee does not sleep. I mean, I've got to tell you, for the first time since I can remember, in the last 2 weeks, she slept until 6 a.m. And I went in there twice to check she was breathing.
Yeah.
Because that just doesn't happen. That does not happen. Wow. She wakes up three times a night, and she's up for hours every single night. And then Dali's up at 4 a.m. So one of us, I draw the short straw in the nighttime. I'm up with Jaylee all night. And then when she goes back to sleep around 4 or 5 a.m., that's when Dali's up. So Dan
is in for support. Well,
this is what the NDIS has allowed us. When the support coordinator first suggested that we get people to stay here overnight, I said, absolutely not. I mean, I can't imagine how that would work. She would just come to us. That won't work. And they kind of insisted that we put it in the package, which is the smart thing to do. Mm. And so we did. And we started doing it in February this year. And it's a game changer. All I need is 5 straight hours sleep. Honestly, that's all I need. And that's what I'm getting once a week. So that is just a complete game changer. Yeah. Really amazing.
Oh, absolutely thrilled for you all.
Yes.
Sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's been a big difference. The other thing NDIS has allowed is some carers. Mm. So we have a lot of disability support workers around because Jaylee bites Dali as well, so we can't even leave them near each other without having a support worker. And that's allowed us to have live-out support workers. So we've had live-in, we had au pairs for years.
All the way
we had
through.
That was the only affordable way, actually.
For the extra pair of hands.
Yes. Yep. And then so the NDIS has allowed us to have our house back but still get the same level of support in the house.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
It was great.
What do you see for your amazing girls in the next kind of 5 years?
Mm. Well, depends what mood I'm in. If I'm optimistic, if I'm in a really optimistic mood, I would answer that we will be in a clinical trial with a therapy that is actually going to fix the the production of SYNGAP, which then has a knock-on effect with all of their symptoms. So I would want to be into a clinical trial, maybe at the end of a clinical trial, and I want them to talk to us. I want them to tell us exactly what they're thinking. They kind of tell us non-verbally what they're thinking now.
Very powerful communicators.
Yeah, completely. Non-verbal communication is up there.
Wow. 11 out of 10.
Yep. But I want them to tell us, and I want I also want them to respond and react to normal stimuli. So I want, if I'm upset, I want Dali to notice, and I want her to be able to comfort me, not just me, anyone who crosses her path. So yeah, I want them to be connected to their world, and ideally that's through some gene therapy or some sort of intervention, but we also need to prepare for that not happening in the short term, and we need to do what we can with therapies to get to a closer point than we are now to that outcome.
Oh, so good catching up. How about you give a shout out to the Facebook group, the Facebook page for SYNGAP?
Sure. So our Australian one is SYNGAP Research. So now we've got 16 Australian SYNGAPians. So now with diagnostic tools being so good, more and more people are being diagnosed. So before they thought they were autistic or just had epilepsy, and now they've actually got a diagnosis of SYNGAP. So that's 16 people in Australia. There's 400 diagnosed throughout the world. So there's a Facebook page called SYNGAP Global Network, and that's for the global group. And we estimate there's millions of people in the world with SYNGAP.
Particularly older.
Yes. Yeah, we know of a 70-year-old. We know of a few 30-year-olds in our groups. So, yeah, it's not life-limiting, the condition that we know of. It's just completely life-changing.
Mm. You get to have the last say. What would you like allied health professionals to think about on the back of our conversation?
What we haven't touched on is especially with complex cases, there's a lot of other things going on, and just to be considerate of everything else that might be going on in this family's life. And I know, Kathy, you and I have had many occasions like this where the child might be having an off day. Mm. I mean, it could be many different things contributing to that. It could be a headache, could be a stomach ache, could be seizure activity that you can't see. Mm. I mean, there's so many different things that could be going on. And I think there's that to be just empathetic and compassionate to the patient or the child, but also to try and relate to how the parent's feeling about that, because that's tough.
Mm.
As a parent, not being able to fix your kid or even know what's wrong, to know what to fix, that's particularly tough emotionally.
Mm.
So to be aware of that, I think, as well. I'm not saying you weren't. You absolutely were, Kathy. You're a great therapist.
Always room for improvement. But, yeah, such a outstanding reminder that we work with more than a child. We work with their whole ecosystem of parents and extended parents. I've met all sorts of members of your family when I think about it now. And yeah, to kind of just pause and ask the what and the why, perhaps.
Yeah. And I suppose also to be open to be flexible and adaptable, especially with complex cases like ours.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like people to think about?
Just make it easier for parents to engage. Mm. I mean, we've got a lot going on. We need things told to us directly in a simple, digestible format that we don't need to take away and have Google or even have guilt that we haven't read for 2 weeks. Just give it to us straight, simply. And then if you also want to attach a long 10-page report, that's good. Some people like that.
Yeah.
But also put in an easily digestible format first.
What would Dan say to that same question?
What would he tell therapists?
Yeah, what would he want therapists to think about?
Oh, I'm not sure. That man always surprises me. It is good. We've been married 11 years and he still surprises me. And he is a therapist as well, so he'd probably have a different perspective.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's another podcast.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too. Goodness.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you so much. I've loved catching up, and thank you so much for wrangling the technology and, most importantly, taking the time to kind of share a bit about your adventure to date. So, huge thanks.
Thanks, Kathy.
A really big thank you for investing your energy right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Made Perfect. I really hope it was helpful and interesting and just what you needed to progress all things awesome in your allied health business. Now, we are all about helping and sharing and caring and making business easier for you guys. Please take a dance over to nacre.com.au. nacre.com.au. Over there, you will see all sorts of things that we're up to, but our biggest excitement right now is the Private Practice Virtual Conference. So save the date, October the 25th, but better still, click a link very near here, click the top banner of the homepage of the website, and get your tickets booked right now. So yes, it's virtual. You can attend from anywhere in the world. It is live and fun and spectacular on October the 25th, but you get 30 days afterwards to jump back in, re-listen, rethink, rework all of the complete program, all of the speakers, all of the presentations, so on and so forth. So over the years, we have had hundreds of allied health business owners from all over the world participate in the virtual conference. And this year, October 25th, we don't want you to miss out. So make sure that you get in and get registered. It's a super cool investment, super, super cool value. And the feedback we get about this program is absolutely remarkable. So it is our pleasure. It's one of our favorite things to do. And we can't wait to e-meet you there at the Private Practice Virtual Conference. And our theme is Excite Your Team for Business Success. So we're answering all of those questions we get about team and helping you get all of that good stuff done. Right, that's enough from me. Look forward to meeting you later.